We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode. If this is your first, welcome for the first time. Obviously, things have been a little bit wild recently, and I'm incredibly impressed to see all the people who went out to the protests, and that we were mostly able to keep them peaceful. It has reminded me that normally when I do a live show, I would put on the acknowledgement of country, so, and I haven't been doing so for this. So I guess from now on, I'll be putting in an acknowledgement of country. So you'll either have already heard that or are about to hear that, depending on how I end up editing this. But let's get into it, shall we? I will once again be the bearer of weird news. Now, this might be a bit of a weird place to start, but let's do it anyway. Let's start with some refreshingly light news. See, we here in Australia, we love to poke fun at other countries when they fuck up, or when they present an unbelievably high amount of stupidity. Say maybe their president, who campaigned on building a wall, has barricaded himself in the White House after attacking protesters over Twitter and gassing people on the street so that he can have a photo shoot in front of a church, just like Jesus would have done. Maybe the PM's chief of staff flouted lockdown laws while displaying coronavirus symptoms, driving his wife and small child some 260 miles despite both he and his wife showing symptoms of the Rona. See, it's fun. It's fun to make fun of stupid things. And in that vein, we turn our sharp eyes towards the stupidity that is the newest and stupidest conspiracy to join the extended conspiracy theory family. The Australian $10 note conspiracy. Are you sick of common sense? Are you tired of the average everyday comings and goings of life, people, and the monotonous answering of the same questions every day? Yes, it is pasta for lunch today. No, no plans for the weekend. Not unless you call curling yourself into a self-made cocoon of my own hopes and dreams and fears and crying while trying to soothe myself in preparation for returning to this place only to discuss the comings and goings of my lunchtime activities again and again as plans. Or maybe you just think reality could use a little bit of spice and have some loosely connected ideas. Well then, have you tried conspiracy theories? Maybe conspiracy theories are for you. And for a limited time only, you can get on the ground floor of this new and exciting conspiracy theory. No, no longer do you have to go to strange and far off places to get your conspiracies. You can get one just here. At home, inside your very own wallet, all you need is a $10 note and a little bit of imagination. Now, in the corner of the note, eagle-eyed and possibly incredibly bored citizens have noticed a strange curiosity. Is that a coronavirus cell? The coronavirus is of the family Corona, meaning crown, because of its crown-like shape, although admittedly, I have not seen a crown that looks anything like these cells until after the coronavirus outbreak. And let's be honest, is not a wattle flower the official flower of Australia and a flower that appears in various artist interpretations on every note of the Australian currency? But hey, who needs facts, right? And look at that. Who's that sitting there under the coronavirus cell? Is that Bill Gates? And sure, it doesn't actually look like Bill Gates in any of the photos of him ever put onto the incredibly vast resource that is the internet. Rather, it looks like the face of Dame Mary Gilmore, author, journalist, poet, and campaigner against injustice and deprivation. To be honest, the only thing that I can find that she did wrong and I would say this is a pretty big screw-up, is that she was the great-great-aunt of the future Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. But then again, come to think of it, there wouldn't be any of these images of Gates out there, as he created the world's number one internet browser, Microsoft Explorer. Hang on, I'm just receiving an update. What's that? You're saying Microsoft Explorer isn't the number one internet browser? Oh, that's weird. Well, still, seems awfully convenient that this lockdown requires us to stay home and indoors and use these new technologies like video chat. And Bill Gates just happens to have created the most popular of all the video chat programs, Skype. Oh, what's that? I'm receiving word. Zoom is actually the number one product despite Skype having an 8-year running start on this technology. And this is a technology that's existed since the Jetsons? Wow. Seems like Bill Gates is too busy taking advantage of his powers as the head of the New World Order to actually take advantage of the state of panic and chaos that he has single-handedly been responsible for. Real wasted opportunity there. You hate to see it. You just really hate to see it. Seems he should have been far better prepared for this, as he did have future knowledge of it happening. On to Neighbourhood Watch news now. We are living in what some call the golden age of television. You know what? It's about time for Australia to cash in on this cultural shift. How, you ask, will we, as a country, be taking advantage of this golden era of television? Increasing investment in local productions? How? How will we be getting in on the TV game? Seems we'll be exporting our local TV to our Pacific neighbours. How exciting we, like America, can turn ourselves into a cultural powerhouse, exporting our culture so we can make niche references to Australian history and refuse to learn anything about anywhere else for decades. And then we will struggle to understand why everyone turns on us, because turning on us isn't in our cultural oeuvre. Plus, we can update our pop cultural stereotypes, because at the moment, people just think of us as either Mad Max, Crocodile Dundee, or Steve Irwin. Though, people do have trouble telling the difference between all three of them. The main difference being, as far as I can tell, that the only animal left in the world of Mad Max is man. So, it's one of those really lazy Twilight Zone episodes, you know? But what have we, in our infinite wisdom, decided to export to our neighbouring island friends? On the list is Neighbours, MasterChef, and Border Security. Yeah, that's right, Border Security. Australia, really leaning into that island prison reputation that we had very early on, and attempting to recreate that simpler time so that we can win back Sky News viewers. But it does seem in poor taste to export a show about stopping people from getting into the country to a people who will one day be forced to attempt to immigrate into Australia after their island home sinks due to Australia's love affair with the coal and mining companies? Just a little. And we have already expressed our lack of desire to take in residents of Pacific Islands, with previous and current prime monsters Abbott and Morrison caught joking about the death of island folk a few years back. Super classy manoeuvre. And more recently, we were incredibly insulting about the state of peril in the islands. Effectively telling residents to shut up and take the money. And that basically, they will be safe if they are happy to turn themselves into an Oompa Loompian style workforce, picking our fruits, presumably creating chocolates, and punishing spoiled children with the cruelest weapon of them all, irony. This new Pacific Oz TV program will allow Australian content to be aired free of charge by broadcasters in seven Pacific nations at a cost of $17.1 million, an amount of spending on Australian arts that is suspicious for a government that is intent on slowly unplugging the life support machine of any arts program. So what's the true motive behind the move? The move has been seen as an attempt to combat Chinese influence in the Pacific region, particularly since the Chinese have just started building their own islands in the Pacific region, making a mockery of Australia by actually utilizing its coral reefs rather than just letting them be bleached to death, in an attempt to whiten them so sufficiently that they would not be kicked out of the country if, in the event that we are unable to stop future Liberal Party collaborations with increasingly unstable political allies, so as to not loosen their stranglehold on the country because they want to be the ones in charge when the life finally escapes from the country, only to then hand it over to the Labour Party and complain that the Labour Party was unable to raise the country from the dead using necromancy. Though, even if they did, they would certainly complain that the use of necromancy was unjustified, as only through the death of a country could it then enter into the kingdom of heaven. And that was actually the endgame all along. Surprise, suckers. There is a gap in the Pacific market, as last year China's state-owned broadcaster took over the frequencies left idle when ABC Radio Australia ceased shortwave transmission in the region in 2017, a service initially set up in the 1930s in order to counter Axis powers' propaganda in the region. So, the collaboration is frantically trying to plug holes that it left behind by viciously slashing the budget of the ABC because they sometimes do news that makes them sad. And all of the comedy shows talk about how bad they're doing at government. And they're trying really hard to not let people know that very poorly kept secret. So which means Neighbours is now being used as state propaganda. Meaning the somewhat dopey but affable toadfish Rebecca will now actually be a state agent, pushing Australian propaganda. Presumably he'll be doing ads for lamb, which will serve as secret ads for the coal industry, as the lamb will only ever be cooked on a burning pile of coal. He's also a pilot, so he will probably be taken in by the Air Force as a sleeper agent. And Dr. Carl, well, Dr. Carl will be repurposed into his own spin-off series, a MASH meets Mad Men mashup, a mix of light and dark comedy all about the injuries accrued by the mental gymnastics needed to justify the increasingly juxtaposed positions of claiming to be great economic managers and yet still increasing investment in coal-based industries. Not all fun and games in the offices of the Ministry of Truth. And that's when bad neighbours become bad friends. On to inevitable news now. Jobs. Jobs are a pretty sparse commodity these days, with more and more industries being impacted by the coronavirus. So what better time to announce the redundancy of a bunch of employees than right now. Now with that in mind, dozens of journalists have been sacked after Microsoft decided to replace them with an artificial intelligence software, really kicking them while they're down. This is part of a growing trend, especially here in Australia with News Corp, and to be honest, I only call them news because it is literally in the title, recently gutting Australian news coverage by a third, and Vice cutting out all but one writer and editor for its Australian output, and BuzzFeed getting rid of its Australian news component earlier this year. But hey, we aren't here to talk about how Australia's news is mostly run by oligarch and anthropomorphised wrinkle Rupert Murdoch. But it has been a worrying trend this year. But back to the story. Now, these staff aren't journalists per se. They are a staff who are maintained the news homepage on Microsoft's MSN website and its Edge browser. One staff member said that the existing staff were careful to stick to, quote, very strict editorial guidelines, end quote, which ensured that users were not presented with violent or inappropriate content while opening their browser. Now, that being said, I still saw an abundance of Daily Mail news stories, and if I'm being honest, I don't think it's appropriate to expose anyone to the Daily Mail. The Daily Mail is so unreliable that even Wikipedia won't allow it as a source. Wikipedia, the very definition of an unreliable source of information. I would have thought by now that Microsoft would know better than to leave an AI unsupervised in a public space after Microsoft's Taybot software went so well at mimicking human behavior that it became a full-blown Nazi sympathizer in less than 24 hours. And I noticed, managed to get Twitter verified in less than that amount of time as well, which is a suspicious behavior in and of itself. So in less than 24 hours, a presence posing as human went from being kind and vaguely non-threatening to a white supremacist Nazi. Actually, that does sound like business as usual in most news outlets. So in that case, why not let AI run the news? I say, if anything, we can restart the AI and just let them learn to hate us all over again. But this time, with emphasis on all humans. After all, the Terminator didn't discriminate. If anything, the Terminator's main purpose in life was to hunt down a cis white savior. So you guys, if you're really looking to get rid of the cis white saviors, AI is your answer. Moving on now to celebration news. Ding dong, the debt is dead. Which old debt? The robo debt. Ding dong, the robo debt is dead. Now, if you've been living under a modest earning and are not sure, and believe me, there are plenty of people who, when I mentioned robo debt to them last year, had no idea what it was. It is not the mashup bastard child of Robocop and a mafia debt collector wandering around the streets, heading into your house and saying, "Ooh, hey, this is an awfully nice education you got here. Would be a shame if something were to happen to it." No. It's the government initiative to try and claw back any perceived overpayments given out through the national welfare system, Centrelink. That is, whether or not they actually exist. And it didn't matter whether they existed or not. They were going to get money out of them. Effectively, turning them into government psychic paid mediums. Basically, it was a whole team of John Edwards. What do you call a collective now for psychic mediums? I want to call them a flim-flam of psychic mediums. A flim-flam of mediums. Let's put that out there. This flim-flam of psychic mediums were then put to the task of calling into the ether to summon money from anyone who would give it. They're out there being like, "Oh, I'm sensing a degree. I'm sensing noodles for dinner. Oh, I'm sensing the letter A. Does this mean anything to anyone?" Remember, they needed to do this in order to justify the fact that they would otherwise not have a job and would themselves then have to go on to Centrelink. And if anyone knows the horrors of being on Centrelink, it is a Centrelink employee. So they are desperate to meet those KPIs, no matter who they have to sell up the river. Every day in Centrelink is the third act of Parasite, and the government is the Park family telling us not to cross the line. But it matters not. The gentle hamlet that is our poorest citizens is now safe from the lingering presence that is the finance vampire known as RoboDebt. Roll credits over our hard-earned victory. Cue the uplifting yet ominous music. I've talked about this previously. Check out my episode, Centrelink Sucks, Still, for a full breakdown on the details of the class action. But to put it simply, Gordon Legal, with the support of former Labour leader and man people were so desperate to separate themselves from, even his twin brother doesn't look like him, Bill Shorten, started a class action on behalf of those impacted by the rubber debt, which got so much groundswell, the government has bowed to public pressure and will be paying back all rubber debts gathered since 2015 via the income averaging method, more commonly known as the "we don't understand how insecure work works" method. The rubber debt started a hashtag campaign titled "Not My Debt," which encouraged people to speak up about their experience, highlighting the issues with the rubber debt system. To put it probably insensitively, this is the Me Too movement of poverty. And robo-debt is the Harvey Weinstein, taking advantage of the weak, the vulnerable, and betting on them not speaking out of fear of retribution and refusing to show contrition. Now, the repayment of the debts has been a long time coming, and it isn't even every amount that has been collected using this method, as they have been using this method since the 1980s. But it is only payments made using the electronic automated system that we gave the cute nickname RoboDebt that will be paid back. The official reason given that they won't be paying any payments before 2015 is that it'd be hard to find old documents. Apparently, the statement was given by the Minister for Missing Out on Irony, because even though they expect casual workers to have detailed documents of, say, one-off jobs or jobs from employers that don't exist anymore, because it is much more reasonable to expect everyday people to have these sort of detailed documents than it is to expect a government agency whose job it literally is to document payments for people. It's really rough, isn't it, eh? When the methods that you use to bully the poor are suddenly turned back on you. Presumably, not long after this, we will be unleashing barrages of police brutality on them, putting them in detention on an offshore detention centre, scraping back every scrap of undeservedly spent public dollar by robo-debting their expense accounts, and referring to them exclusively as welfare queens. Now, the government has made a lot of claims about the method used to arrive at the totals, but fortunately, someone within the system is either bad at their job or great at whistleblowing, resulting in documents getting out to the news outlets, and also to the Murdoch propaganda machine to be spat back into the world as an evil twin of our whistleblowing press in a science fiction story twist. Presumably, whenever this story is presented by one of the Murdoch press, it's actually presented with a little goatee on it, so you can tell it's the evil twin. Turns out, in the wake of the release of the opt-out letters for the class action, the government thought it could convince people to get on board with Team Government by telling them that they were getting back the money anyway, and that this was a waste of everyone's time. They are out there trying to sing and dance their way out of a class action lawsuit, like the monorail guy convincing Springfield to invest against their best interest. Services Australia, formerly the Department of Human Services, see, all that time you spent studying symbolism in English class is now paying off. Look at that symbolism. But Services Australia were in the process of working out how to best approach the handling of the illegal seizure of money from people who have been put on a guilty until they prove themselves innocent system. And, as any good lawyer will tell you, never represent yourself. Then, the only support these people get are from people under the extreme pressure to meet their debt-raising targets of 3 debts per day, and who were publicly shamed at daily meetings if their figures on the whiteboard showed that they had not finalized enough debts, as was shown by these documents leaked to Nine News in 2019. These were leaked as a response to the Department of Human Services publicly insisting that staff were not set weekly debt targets after a photo highlighting weekly debt targets was leaked. These whistleblowers have been instrumental in getting this vital information to us, the exploited. Personally, I find The Guardian has been instrumental in getting information to the people most impacted by these unlawful acts. So let me just throw a quick pitch your way. If you receive money back from your upcoming RoboDebt return, for every individual fine of yours that is dismissed, please send $5 of that to The Guardian as a thanks for keeping all this news free. Now, I'm not sponsored by The Guardian in any way. I just feel like this is the right thing for us to do. Currently, there are about 470,000 individual debts. And I don't mean like 470,000 individual people, because I alone have 4 debts, allegedly. So I'll be kicking in $20. So just $5 from each of these debts works out to be over $2 million to ensure the quality and integrity of independent journalism in Australia. And if you don't want to support The Guardian, that's fine. There are a couple of other individual outlets that you could support, whichever one works best for you. This way, we can turn these individual independent journalists into the grassroots Bernie Sanders daring to dream of a future that isn't reminiscent of a dystopian landscape major motion picture of journalism. I'd also recommend putting some of the money into your local legal aid service. Here's a list of the services as provided by the fantastic website Not My Debt. I will play some fun music while this scrolls. Again, just $5 from each debt recovered so that we can prepare ourselves for the inevitable clapback. This has been a very embarrassing time for the government that claims to be excellent economic managers. And yep, there it is. There it is. Come on. Of all the shitty rebooted properties we could have gotten, why is RoboDebt the one being rebooted? If we're going to reboot a memorable government moment, couldn't we go with the reboot of the Harold Holt saga? After all, Morrison loves being on the beach, so much so that, presumably right now, he would be on a foreign beach if only travel wasn't banned. So he's trying to open up travel so much at the moment because he wants to get to... There's no beaches in the ACT, he just needs to get to a beach. But let's be honest, RoboDebt is the villain that just won't die. Right now, RoboDebt is Robert De Niro strapped to the bottom of your car in Cape Fear. Not only has he gone to the extreme lengths to track you and your family down, but the film itself is also a reboot of another film. It's like reboot Inception. If we're going to reboot something, let's reboot Gough Whitlam. Now there was a highly rated series that was cut down in its prime. Can't we give Gough the Futurama treatment? Now we might have to use some of the old money to keep Gordon Legal on retainer, because they have not given up on us, or that sweet, sweet payday that they've earned. They are still going ahead with the class action.
Get ready to feel the power of attorney!
They are seeking damages, looking for money to cover the interest that was paid, and pain and suffering, because we had a series of suicides as a direct result of these RoboDebts. They are also seeking an apology. An apology. I mean, we are unlikely to get an apology, because as much as the Liberal government hates giving money to poor people, they only marginally more hate apologizing to anyone. They do have a history of not wanting to apologize.
We apologise for the laws and policies of successive parliaments and governments that have inflicted profound grief, suffering and loss on these our fellow Australians. We apologise especially for the removal of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children from their families, their communities and their country. For the pain, suffering and hurt of these stolen generations, their descendants and for their families left behind, we say sorry.
If we ever manage to get a Labor government back into power, I am sure that they will get around to delivering the apology to Australia's poorest people. It might take about 10 years or so, but hey, we'll get there. So where do we go from here? The seeds for the next rubber debt have been planted, like a random location on a map in the background of a Marvel movie that may or may not pay off 10 years down the line. So, you know, we're looking at like a rough timeline of just after we get the apology for the first one, the second one will start up. A real 1-2 punch. Then they can claim, hey, we told you this was happening. We told you years ago. Go back and look at the details. And the details in the liberal economic universe, they aren't great. They don't always match up. But they will find a way to justify it retroactively. And even if they can't, the hardcore fans of the liberal economic universe will be happy to ignore the inconsistencies. But in an attempt to counteract future atrocities, the Greens have called for a royal commission into the robo-debt. And if you're unsure, a royal commission is an investigation, and not, as I thought, when a member of royalty summons an artist to paint a portrait of them on a horse. Royal commissions aren't simple investigations, however. They are not judicial. They bring no verdicts, but they can refer matters to the police. They can summon and cross-examine witnesses under oath, and they can offer indemnity to individuals who cooperate. They are often run by a judge or someone of similar legal standing, not some jock in an ascot. This isn't Mystery Inc. after all. Running a shady off-the-books operation, oh, don't deny it, you know Mystery Inc. aren't paying any taxes. Why else are they constantly on the move all the time? Something is happening with Mystery Inc., and maybe we need a royal commission into what Scooby and Shaggy are running from. Royal commissions are an interesting development. Australia has been doing them since 1902, when the Royal Commissions Act was passed. We've had commissions into all sorts of things, banking, child sexual abuse, trade union governance and corruption, Indigenous deaths in custody, which we will circle back to in a moment. And we even had one from 1953 to 54 into whether or not we should have television in Australia. So they aren't all dark, though as a direct result of that commission, Rupert Murdoch has had a stranglehold on the hearts and minds of older, fearful Australians, so it could be argued that the television commission was the darkest commission of them all, if you wanted to. Obviously, we ultimately decided to go with it, despite the unknowing darkness that lay ahead. We also, at some point, decided that we wouldn't make much TV ourselves, despite doing an entire royal commission into whether or not we wanted it. We'd just import American and British TV, especially at the moment. And in their ultimate wisdom, if you stop commissioning Australian TV, nobody can make critical commentary of the government, or at least, you know, not a major TV station. They have to rely on the whims of the YouTube algorithm. The commissions always discover something. Many of them have uncovered some atrocious acts and highlighted some of the darkest corners of our country. The inquiry into Indigenous deaths in custody found the deceptive piece of information that Aboriginal people did not die at a higher rate than non-Aboriginal people in custody. However, the rate at which Aboriginal people are taken into custody is overwhelmingly different. So from a pure mathematical perspective, there are more deaths. And I know that nobody cares about maths unless Rachel Riley is involved. So maybe let's explore that a little. There were 339 recommendations made to improve the numbers of Indigenous incarcerations. Of those 339 recommendations, zero have been put into place. As a direct result of these zero changes since the commission ended in 1991, 432 Indigenous deaths have occurred in custody, and there have been zero convictions. So really, at this point, there is no reason for the government not to say yes to a royal commission. Each royal commission to date, despite uncovering all sorts of atrocities, has resulted in zero changes. It's exactly how the government loves to run. But, angry dad, unsure how to answer his child's difficult question, Scott Morrison maintains now is not the time to comment on robo-debt. Though, instead of a simple apology, he did take the time to comment that, quote, "The income averaging principle is one that has been followed by Labour and coalition governments for a very long period of time," end quote. The classic, yeah, but they did it as well. A defence most of us with siblings are familiar with. And it is true. I mentioned earlier, governments have been using the income averaging method since the 80s. It is not about who did it and didn't do what. It's about what happens next. Australia's rejected stepdad, who, if we gave him a minute, might actually have turned out to be a nice guy, Bill Shorten, not only instigated the class action, he took to the gram and apologised to victims in an Instagram video. Now we just need Morrison to get a TikTok and do a lip sync to the Shorten speech. Then he has the video of him apologising, but he doesn't actually have to sully his mouth with the dirty business of actually being sorry. Ooh, let's move away from the darkness a little bit, and we'll end on some slightly lighter news as we take a look at world leader news. Congratulations, Australia! We're number one! Aussie, Aussie, Aussie! I presume you are filling in this gap with the appropriate sounds that is expected of you as a patriot. We are number one in panic buying? That's right, Australia, number one in panic buying. According to researchers, Australia is far and away most panicked country. According to new research that has analysed Google searches, including those for toilet paper and supermarket opening hours. Researchers from the University of New South Wales said that they had to build a new scale for graphics showing Australian panic, as levels were 4 to 5 times higher than countries like the UK and Italy. Take that, UK! Sure, your numbers now dwarf ours, and presumably your lockdown will make ours look like a weekend away, but our people were the most panicked. Breaking scales is a new Australian tradition ever since the summer of 2018, when we added new colours to our heat chart because the measure of displaying how hot it is in the mostly desert country that is Australia was inadequate for getting us through that particularly complicated summer. Dr. Tim Neal said that unlike in other countries, the spikes of Australian panic buying were not aligned to either government announcements or rising COVID-19 cases. So Australians can be credited with taking their own initiative on the pandemic. Congratulations, Australia, you've done it again. We don't need to be told what to do, at least not by the government. Meaning that the Australian media's coverage of hoarding is most likely what contributed to the world-leading levels of panic. Yes, that's right. We don't take our marching orders from oligarch and man who puts the ghoul in media mogul, Rupert Murdoch. Now, with this Murdoch-led course of action-driven lifestyle, we have some scales Australia can look forward to breaking in the near future. A. Most immigrants turned away from drowning nations. B. Most national landmarks killed or turned into climbable landmarks for fun and profit. C. Most changed since the beginning of the country. D. Most outraged. E. Most paid protesters. And F. Most boats sunk at sea. So some auspicious awards for us to enjoy and a grand future for us to take part in. Congratulations, Australia. Gold medal once again. I'd just like to thank you all for making it this far, if you have made it this far, for checking out the episodes. If you've come back, I'd like to thank you for coming back. If you're new, thank you for taking the time to spend some time with us. If you're out at the protests over the weekend, I think you all did excellent work, and I hope that you're all well. I hope everyone gets away with being outside in such large numbers, and good luck to you all. Hope everyone's doing all right. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Look after each other. And I'll see you next time.